Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today, we have Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you this morning.
Good morning, Dr. Paul. How are you?
Doing well.
Thursday.
We're going to balance the budget today.
And that's right.
We're going to point out a few things that are a little bit foolish.
A little bit curious.
Maybe they'd fix that up. But let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah.
But it's worth mentioning the craziness that's going on. And, you know, there's this fellow, Elon Musk. He deals in millions, billions, trillions of dollars.
Lots of money.
And even what's going on now, these little tidbits like debit card, $10,000, that's peanuts to him. But he's getting annoyed by this. And he should be, of course. All Americans should be. And I hope there'll be a backlash on this. But they say that if the government comes in, they want to take care of, these are the people who are pro-immigration and that sort of thing. And we have a humanitarian responsibility to take care of these people. So therefore, you know, we have to house them, even if it's at the expense of people who worked a long time for their own house and their own condition, their own community. That doesn't matter. They have some other goal. I haven't figured it out yet. How could they be so motivated to do what they do with illegals? You know, once again, though, the thought that comes to my mind when this happens is they do all these things, and they sound like it's well-intended, but one has to remember that if you subsidize something, you always get more of it.
Yep.
And this is more than a subsidy. This is outright theft that they're taking from decent people and handing it over to somebody else. And then they wonder why a lot of people are coming.
Yeah.
And this is, people worried about this. This has been going on for years. But I just wonder whoever made any specific predictions would have ever believed it could get so ridiculous. And it is, and it continues. But the one thing that got Elon's attention was the fact that they're going to give debit cards to the illegals. Oh, maybe they need $50 a week or something to get bread.
A little more than that. A
little bit more than that. It's a $10,000 debit card, and you know, if they spend it in 2 months, they're not going to let those people out on the street.
No.
And they'll still have to, you know, confiscate property from somebody else. The one thing they don't see this is, the whole mess of this is an issue of theft, stealing from one and giving to another. The whole issue of immigration, I think, is one thing. People are coming in and they're stealing the benefits. And if people thought of the invasion of illegal immigrants as compatible to somebody who's invading our community or in our houses, they might feel differently. But the, you know, the very rich see it a little bit different. They have a gated community.
That's right.
I wonder how many illegal immigrants are settled in gated communities. probably not many.
There might be, but there are cooks and weed pullers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They're not.
But anyway, that's a big issue. $10,000. But this just makes so many points of what they've done. I mean, look at the disaster of the student loan program. And, you know, it's an illegal program. It's unconstitutional. It's based on theft. And then they come along and they give the power to the president. He said, oh, I feel sorry for you. If you owe that all that money, we've had problems like that too, but we went to the government and they helped us out.
Yeah.
So he's relieving them of the debt.
Yeah.
What I don't think they've quite realized, and they're starting to, is that there are some people who are just more honest with the situation, who already had their loans and felt, you know, a moral obligation to return the loan. And then all of a sudden, this happens. So it causes a lot of anger. So they're trying to buy political favors, you know, by doing this and win the election by being so generous with somebody else's money. But I don't think it's going to work. There'll be another problem coming up. The money has to come from someplace. It'll be audited onto the debt. And then they haven't been able to escape interest on debt. And now we know interest on debt is a bigger deal than national defense.
Yeah.
So it's a mess, but it's very symbolic of the ridiculousness of the whole immigration program.
Yeah, I mean, I thought San Francisco was a nut house, and it is. But New York City sounds even crazier than that. put on this first clip. Now, we'll start out with a tweet because I think it's a good explanation. There are two crazy things about this program. Now, City Council calls for an investigation of Mayor Adams' plan to give illegals $10,000 debit cards. The $53 million contract would give Mobility Capital Finance, who the mayor touts as minority-owned, lots of fees for services. And Ryan James Gurdusky, I think he's a conservative writer, he says Mayor Adams' reason for offering $53 million no-bid contract to a company to distribute the $10,000 debit cards to migrants is because it's a minority-owned business. So you almost have a twofer here, because on the one hand, you've got the craziest of just handing people, oh, you're new to town? Here's $10,000
on your card. We stole the money, yeah. But don't worry about
exactly.
it.
Exactly, go ahead. And then they offered, Mayor Adams offered a no-bid contract to a company, and they're going to pocket $53 million for handing out cards. Oh, it's a minority-owned business. So you have the wokeness of the minority-owned business, and apparently they've never done anything like this before. I have a couple of clips about it. And you have the craziness of handing out this free money for everyone. And they're refillable. Like you say, if you run down a little bit, well, they'll top you back up.
Well, you know, I think this president we have likes the idea and the principle of democracy.
Yeah.
But this sounds more like tyrannical management. You know, they take the money from somebody and pass it off and buy the votes, and then they say, well, you don't have to repay it. It's a tyrant running thing. But he's not. Biden isn't the first one. It's the whole system that is like that. But he might be right now in targeted because they're so blatant. And, just like that minimum wage, you know, is part of it, too, you know, out in California. When I first heard of the minimum wage, okay, it was $253. It needs to be up to $10. I said, well, why don't you make it 15?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's right now, it's just a little bit too much. So right now, it's up to 50. I think that even shocked the most pro. Holy man, we could get that. But it just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It's not a good economic policy, but it's not good moral policy. And I think it's a mixture. I think the morality of a wealth redistribution on purpose to help one group against the other one, that starts it off, and then you run into all these economic factors.
Yeah. Well, let's look a little bit into this story, because it is crazy. This first article, now this is a reprint in the Manhattan Institute from New York Post article about it. Inside Mayor Adams' migrant debt card boondoggle. No bid bank gets $50 million. Border crossers up to 10,000 each. Go ahead, and here's some from the article. Takes money to make money, as the old saying goes. Apparently, it also takes money as much as $53 million to give money away. And go to the next one. So it was misreported that this is a $50 million project, and that's the total cost. No, that's not true. The debit card program, if you read the actual contract, according to the article, has the potential to become an open-ended, multi-billion-dollar Bermuda Triangle of disappearing, untraceable cash used for any purpose. It will give migrants up to $10,000 each in taxpayer money, no ID check, no restrictions, and no fraud control. I'm going to dress up as an illegal and go up to New York this weekend to get my $10,000.
And that's what pure democracy brings you. So if you happen to be in a minority, you're in big trouble.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of people think. You have to have all this help to help the minority. But it isn't that. It's the majority that's always victimizing the minority. And the minority, they know they're getting hit and they're upset by it, and they cry for more and they get more. But they're missing the point. It's not going to work. You know,
yeah.
they just keep people quiet for a while by passing out more stolen money and goods. But eventually the whole system comes apart. And right now it doesn't seem like it's going to happen next week, but it will happen.
Yeah, and there's a lot of questions about why they picked this company to hand out the cards. And if you just move ahead, I'll just show one of the questions about it. I think it's like a scandal within a scandal. Which vendors did the city's Housing Preservation and Development consider as for this contract as qualified to provide this complex financial service? New York City is home to hundreds of top-tier financial services and public benefits providers, a dream of a competitive bidding pool to ensure the city gets a good price as well as strong protections against fraud, but HPD considered only one, Newark-based Mobility Capital Finance. And if you go to the next one, the Mayor Adams did suggest why they got the contract without a bid. And as we said, it's because it's a minority-owned business. They may well be good, but they don't have any experience doing this. So it's what a mess there.
And, you know, if it's a handout, you know what it means more and more.
Yeah.
Until the whole thing falls apart. But
it's also, I mean, I think a little corporate welfare, too, when you think about it, because they're going to be using these debit cards to buy things from the big agribusinesses. You know, they're going to be buying junk food, Coca-Cola. I don't know. Maybe they'll be allowed to buy beer. You never know. But
they'll use that as an excuse. That's an additional benefit.
Yeah.
This is the expansion. This is the invisible hand working. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And then if things get nasty, what do they do? They'll probably punish all the rest of us by starting to monitor what these people buy. And then they'll get a system in place to monitor everything everyone buys. You'll probably try to, no, sorry, Dr. Paul, you've had too many potato chips this month. Your card is rejected.
Well, I think they've already started accumulating those lists.
Yeah. Well, I'm in trouble then. So, well, let's go on to something that you did mention, and it is another issue. This is kind of a monetary insanity is sort of the theme of our first segment. Now, Barbara Lee is someone that you've worked with, and she's a very nice person, and she's very well-meaning, and she's especially good on foreign policy. But I would say, and I think you would agree, that economics is probably not her strong point. If you put this one up, just do the math. California Democrat wants to hike the federal minimum wage to $50 an hour. She says the six-figure salaries are barely enough to get by. Is she right? She said, if you go to the next one, when justifying this $50 minimum wage, she said, I've got to be focused on what California needs and what the affordability factor is when we calculate this wage. So,
see, the middle class and the poor have an honest beef because they're paying the biggest tax under these conditions because their money goes down in the value percentage-wise more than anybody else. But they do this and they expect that that's it. So what they interpret is when they go to the store and they get their bag of groceries that used to cost $10 is now costing $25.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm short money.
Yeah.
They always think that inflation, prices go up because of gouging. And some would say those unions did it. They all do push it up. They might affect prices, but they don't create the inflation because that's just not the way it works. So they do this and they say, you know, we will do this and we'll have to just stop it. But the people who are hurt, we need more money.
Yeah.
$25 isn't helping us. We need $50 an hour.
Yeah.
And you wonder why, you know, their moral outrage of wanting to help people, and they criticize at the right time, like Barrio criticized too much spending in the military.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll do that at times, but they don't realize that inflation is a much different thing. It should be easier to explain because if you just talk about prices, you know, weather can affect prices and, you know, supply, so many variations of it. So they come in and they say, okay, we have to stop this. We have to have more money.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, they get more money. Of course, it's the excessive money against production that causes prices to go up.
Yeah, yeah.
And I swear you can teach that if you have access to 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
I think they understand that.
Yeah. Some of our friends do it, the Tuttle Twins guys.
Yeah.
They teach good Mayberry. There is a lot out there. But, you know, it is like giving more narcotics to a drug addict because the problem is inflation created by excessive spending. And so now you put on a $50 minimum wage, and what do you get? More inflation.
Yay.
So it's terrible. Well-meaning, but I mean, they should. Everyone should study.
Bad education.
Austrian
economics. Who runs the education? Let's call that guy up.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's Biden.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the student loan, and I didn't get a clip on it, but Biden says, even though the Supreme Court said I can't do it, I'm going to do it. I'm going to, you know, relieve your student loans. And I think it was our friend Mike Rechtenwald who had a tweet, you know, basically making the good point that what he's basically doing is making the kids who couldn't afford it, for some reason couldn't get to college, they're paying off the loans of the kids who got to go to college. You know, if you think about it, well, I didn't get to go. I had to take a job. I had to do this and that. Okay, well, you pay this guy's loan off.
Oh, yeah.
Terrible, terrible. Well, let's move on to the next story we're going to talk about. And this is just a classic, typical thing. And I sent it over to you because this is just so how much the neocons operate, you know. And it's always the same. You've said it so many times, you know, oh, we should never have gotten out of Vietnam. Oh, if we'd only had one more surge in Iraq, only stayed in Afghanistan. It's only been 20 years. Come on, guys, don't go soft on us. Well, here's another one of those don't go soft on us articles from the neocons, who could never admit they were wrong. And this came in by way of Politico. Four myths that about Ukraine that might sound wrong, might sound right, but they're actually wrong. So I messed that up. But four myths that they kind of sound right, but no. Trust us, they're wrong. And so who are the authors? Let's put the next one up. Eric Edelman. Now, he was Undersecretary of Defense for Policy in 2005 and 2009. That's during Bush. That's during the surges in Afghanistan and Iraq, the counterinsurgency war that did nothing. You remember, Dr. Paul, over and over again, the Fred Kagans of the world coming up to the Hill saying, we're almost there, guys, just a little bit more. Well, this is the swamp. This is the soup that these guys were in. The second guy's even worse, David Kramer. Now, he worked for John McCain. John McCain, as you know, Dr. Paul, was the one who instigated the Maidan coup in Ukraine. So he started the whole thing. Now he's director of the George W. Bush Institute. I'm sure that is a beacon of intelligent thought. And he was the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Russia, Ukraine, Belarus, and Moldova from 05 to 08. So he is steeped in the milieu of regime change in Ukraine with the ultimate goal of regime change in Russia. That's where they're coming from. Anyone who just reads their bio shouldn't read any further.
But it's still baffling to see so many failures, and they consistently fail, and we can consistently point out policies that will most likely fail, and yet they just march on, but they're never embarrassed by it. They don't know what embarrassment means. They never feel shame. They never feel guilt for this, and they always justify and flip it. Oh, you guys don't like America.
Yeah.
You don't like the military. And they go on, and they turn it around, and successfully at times, you know, shift the blame. But that's a big thing. It's so baffling. They come from a different world.
Yeah.
But that's why, if you don't introduce at least the notion of the higher law, a moral higher standard, which has been around for a long time, that you can sort out right and wrong, because governments aren't very good at it.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, the higher law is to be used to be higher law than government law. You know.
Yeah.
But it's a real pity, and that's when I get convinced it's a moral issue. Because they do this, and how many people died during the Middle Eastern wars?
Yeah.
How many people died in Vietnam? You know, they complain about the evacuation of Afghanistan. Well, it should have been prevented. Totally, nobody should have died, because we shouldn't have been there.
Yeah, exactly. They'll never say that.
No, because we were defending America.
Yeah.
So that is a shame, and leaving of Vietnam was not exactly sterile. You know, it was a little messy too.
Yeah.
A lot more. So to say that Afghanistan was the very worst. Well, who knows what is the worst? Because there's a lot of evacuations that never get known about.
Yeah.
But all we know is a lot of people die, and there's a lot of suffering, and the people who conspire against the people that would just like to be left alone. They're the ones who benefit from all this.
Yeah, and they certainly don't care about the people who don't benefit, and in fact, who get killed, because there's an estimate now of 500,000 Ukrainian soldiers died in this war so far. These guys want it to keep going. They don't want it to stop. They're comfortable. I mean, you're right, there is no shame. I think, you know, being a foreign policy expert is the only career that I can think of, at least, where if you continually are wrong, and everything you do is wrong, you actually get promoted. You know, imagine if your plumber came over and every time he tried to fix your toilet, he broke it even worse.
You know, we could mention the four myths.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do myth one. Ukraine cannot win. That's a myth. You know, just sort of invert it and turn it on its head. Let's start with a big one. The myth that U.S. support will feed an endless war with no possibility of victory. Yeah, because the neocons have never done that before, right? So they performed, keep it up, please, heroically and successfully. They're, you know, that's a myth that they can't win. Well, I found something that says it depends on what you, how you define winning, because put the next one up. Now, a big city just fell, Avdiivka just fell to Russia. And here's how the media frames it. Ukraine's withdrawal from Avdiivka is an advance towards victory. So maybe these guys are right. If losing a town brings you closer to victory, then maybe they're right.
The march is on.
The march is on, yeah. So that's number one. Skip ahead to number two. Myth two is it's time for a ceasefire. And this is the one that I find a little bit disgusting, because these guys are very comfortable in D.C. Trust me, they've got nice houses. And these other guys that are in the trenches, it's a nightmare. But no, 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 guys, you keep doing it. You keep staying in the trenches.
And I can't even find one of these four where the president might be right on.
Yeah.
He's wrong on all these things.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so are the neocons and the Republicans that push all this stuff.
Yeah.
But there is a growing group, though, in Congress right now are getting pretty tired of it and not dealing any at all with the borders, which is just an additional problem for us.
Yeah. Well, myth three, and we got to go back. I'm sorry I messed up the order. But myth three, this is almost laughable. It's a myth that Ukraine is hopelessly corrupt. How dare you? There's a myth that Ukraine is a corrupt country led by neo-Nazis. Well, I literally at random did a quick search before the show. Do that first. These are Breitbart, too, which is a super pro-war publication. Just a couple of examples. Zelensky purges 9 top officials as Ukraine corruption allegations linger. And do the next one. New York Times wakes up to corruption in Ukraine as officials admit military contract money has vanished. So this is a right-wing Breitbart, you know. So it's just a myth, though. It's just a myth.
Well, they would point out the election in 2019. That was cleaning up the act of our intrusion and our coup. So Poroshenko, who was supposedly an elected leader, but he was our appointee. So they have an election, and they sort of beat him pretty hard. But and then they want to argue, well, this is an example that it's corrupt. But that's the part. So many, we don't have to go very far to find something what is corrupt. In many ways, the whole principle of some of these elections, the way they're run, they're corrupt at core. You know, what if it's all based on lies?
Yeah.
Isn't it corrupt? It's based on economic lies. It's based, you think these are these are lies or what are they? But if some people will look at that and say, well, they're diehards and they agree with the complaint here.
Yeah. Well, we even heard it. Victoria Nuland, she was on tape saying, we've invested $5 billion in Ukraine. So, you know, they're picking and choosing who's running. But here, let's do the last myth, though, because this is kind of, again, unintentionally hilarious. Myth four, Ukraine is the wrong priority. How dare we say that? It brings us to the final myth, namely that supporting Ukraine distracts from where we should really be concentrating our efforts, of course, China and the Middle East. But here's the funny thing, here's their rationale. That's why this is wrong. Ukraine is the right priority. And why is that? We'll go to the next one. It's the right priority because Russia invaded a neighboring state. Russia invaded someone out of the blue. How unintentionally hilarious, because these guys served under a president who invaded Iraq based on lies completely out of the blue.
These people should be told, if you feel strongly about this, we as constitutionalists and libertarians, we don't want to draft you or send you to have you do or deny it. But you can pick up your rifle or do what you want. You can go over there and do it. But there's not too much of that goes on.
They're not big on that. They're not, you know. And I've seen some of these guys in Ukraine. They're older than even David Kramer. So if they can do it, David, you can do it. So anyway, I'm going to close out, Dr. Paul, by just a periodic reminder. If you put that last one up, go to ronpaulinstitute.org and sign up for our updates. We'll get Dr. Paul's weekly column in your mailbox, so you're sure to never miss it. And also, I do an update once a week with an exclusive article. It's all free. And as you know, we don't sell, rent, give away your name or any information about you. It stays with us. I'll put a link in the description of how you can subscribe for free Ron Paul Institute updates. Over to you, Dr.
You know, and one strong suggestion I have is the founders tried to prevent this nonsense by making it hard to get into war, and that the president can't take you to war. It's the Congress, and the Congress, by consent of the people, that's who decides whether or not we should go to war. So the rule is that Congress has to declare war. And yeah, I remember in 76 when I won a special election, and very naive about what was going on, but had got reactions and had already come to the position of the war issue. So they, I was on a radio show with a liberal Democrat very early on, and it had to do with foreign policy, and it came up, and I said, well, why don't we just wait until somebody declares war? And they sort of settled me down because I was only there a week. I didn't know anything. They said, well, Ron, we have to let you know that that it's never going to happen again. And this guy was, a committee chairman. You know, he knew the answer. It's never going to happen again. They're never going to make a declaration of war. And I thought, well, you know, and then, of course, that lit up later on when I was in a committee at a place when I tried to give him a lecture on, you can't do this. This was when Bush wanted to go over and start his 20-year war. And that was, you know, they didn't like that idea. I don't think I got one vote that said we should, talk about declaring the war. And I told them I wasn't going to vote for it. I had an amendment that said, you have to declare war. I said, I'm not going to vote for this, but I think you people who want this war ought to have the integrity of voting for it or against it.
Absolutely.
So,
very good.
Okay. So I want to, once again, thank all our viewers today for tuning in, and please return to the Liberty Report soon.